Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
This podcast is part of the Grand Embassy Productions. Hello, comrades, and welcome to Tsar Power. I'm Roberto.
And I'm Aurora, and together we're ranking the Russian rulers from Rurik to Putin to see who gets to party it out in the Kremlin or get shipped off to the Gulag. This week, our third prince of Vladimir Suzdal, ruler number 28, Yaropolk III.
As we jump into today's episode, we want to let you know about the History of Venice, a podcast talking about...
Venice?
Yes! So, come on, Simon and Jess, hop on in there.
Go learn about the why there was a society founded in the lagoon.
Hello, I'm Simon.
And I'm Jess.
From the History of Venice podcast.
If you've ever wanted to know more about the unlikely history behind the breathtaking city of Venice, we've got a show for you.
Every week or two, we take half an hour to look in depth at some of the great stories that turned these muddy lagoon islands into one of the world's most extraordinary and improbable cities.
Join us to find out more about the citizens who defeated Charlemagne's army with baguettes.
The merchants who stole the body of one of the Bible's authors and hid him in a big box of pork.
The Doge who became so unpopular that people burned the city down just to get rid of him.
The crusading detour that brought down the Roman Empire.
And the old lady who accidentally defeated an insurrection by dropping a heavy pestle and mortar on someone's head because he was being too noisy.
We've also got Top Doge episodes, where we choose our favourite doge from each century.
The true life story of the original Casanova.
And occasional investigations into the stories behind some of the city's most characteristic art, culture, food and literature.
And for extras, we also do occasional side quest episodes on other interesting non-Venetian characters.
Check out our series on Rex Factor legend Walter Manny.
And his even more brilliant wife, Margaret Marshall.
You'll find all these greatest hits, and many, many more, by searching for History of Venice wherever you get your podcasts.
Or following our social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky.
Alrighty, that was pretty fun. I'm interested in starting, you know, to hear about why Venice decided to destroy Constantinople, but whatever. Not salty at all.
You might say it was a sort of a blind decision.
But
it's an inside joke for people who know.
it really aged him. Let's not get on that crusade because that's a next episode kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's happening next episode in our timeline. So before we start, as always, let's thank our wonderful Patreon members who have been as amazing as always with their continued support. Even if I take forever to write a podcast episode for Patreon, You guys are great, and we couldn't run the show without you. So here's your shout out. Thank you to Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson, Hallie Kuntz, Hal the Legionnaire, Emily Bavona, Quinn Campagna, David Montgomery, Konstantina Megrelishvili, Gracie D., Daniel Bowline, Vivek Dendekar, and John Aaron. You are all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. And of course, if you want to join the mall and get your name shouted out, you can support us on Patreon. At some point soon, we may hopefully have to only do the new ones, because if we can get the list to be longer, that'd be great. And then we have two other announcements as well. So as I mentioned last time, we do have a merchandise store. So if you want to get some, you know, holiday swag for your Tsar Power fan, there's some stickers, cups, branded Tsarbucks logo with Oga of Kiev on it. And it's all available now for a 10% discount until the end of the year. So go get it at tsarpower.com.
Get swag. Hey, yeah. Get swag.
And then the last thing, this is probably the most important thing of this announcement, is that, Aurora, guess what?
What?
We're going to be part of Intelligence Speech this year, or next year, 2026.
Again?
Again. And this time, the Intelligence Speech Conference will happen on February 28th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the Eastern Daylight Time. I don't know how it works. Anyways, it'll be early for you.
Everything's early for me now.
Yeah. The theme this year will be companions and rivals. And Aurora, I am presenting on a topic that you may find interesting.
Oh.
So what is everyone's favorite companion in the world?
I was going to say a cold soda with my pizza is one of my favorite companion pieces. But if we're talking for me, I guess my dog.
And we are talking about dogs. Specifically, a very famous Russian dog.
Oh, could you possibly be talking about the famous Russian dog that my dog is named after?
We are talking about Laika for sure. And just the Russian animal space program in general.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
It does make me sad too, but would it be Russian history if it didn't make you sad?
No, it wouldn't.
Just keeping on theme, you know. So if you want to get a ticket to this, you can use the code TSAR, T-S-A-R, for a 10% discount. But only if you buy before December 15th. So by the time this comes out, you have about 2 weeks before you get it. But I will superimpose this segment into the previous episode, so you'll hear it way before the hand. So if you buy before December 15th, you will pay $20 plus a 10% discount. Anytime after that, it's a $30 ticket with a 10% discount with the code TSAR. That is T-S-A-R. That means if you use that code, you get a discount and we get paid. So let's get into the episode.
I'm ready.
All right. So if you're ready, what do you remember about Mikhalko?
The second worst ranked ruler we've ever had?
Yes. You remember that?
Yeah. He was terrible. He didn't do anything. He was bad at what he did do.
Yeah. He's the second worst one we've ranked so far. So let's talk about the guy who was in between his reigns. If you want to see how he ranks. So this time, we're going to be talking about Yaropolk III. We've had two Yaropolks before him.
The great name cleansing is coming.
Yeah. You know, it'll take some time, but we're getting there. We just have too many Mstislavs before the end.
Oh, there's so many Mstislavs, folks. I need to warn you, there are so many.
There are so many, and you'll see why. Anyways, let's do some etymology. We haven't had a Yaropolk in a bit. The last Yaropolk we had was Yaropolk II, who was our 17th ruler. So it's been about 11 rulers since we had a Yaropolk.
Yeah, that's a while.
And that Yaropolk was sent to the Gulag as well. Or it was sent to the Gulag. The first Yaropolk was also sent to the Gulag. So can he break the mold?
Not a good track record for Yaropolks.
No, not really. Vladimir's had the best track record. They always get sent to the Kremlin.
Interesting. I wonder if that will continue all the way to the end of this podcast.
And so do people with the name Olga or Oleg. So we'll find out. Well, anyway, we've gone through Yaropolk's name twice, but you haven't, Aura. So I'll just let you know what his name means. Yaropolk comes from two words. Yari, which means like violet or like bright. And polk meaning regiment or like field. So he could be like a bright field or a violent regiment.
In English, those sound pretty different, but I can kind of see the etymology there.
Yeah, so it just depends on like what you're really trying to get out of it. With that, let's get into his life? Because I think that's a very important thing that we have to cover in this episode, possibly. I don't know.
Maybe.
If you thought Mikako's childhood lacked the story, wait till you hear about Yaropuk III's. So he was born sometime in the 1100s, you know? But definitely before 1151.
Well, it's good to have an upper bound there.
Because, you know, 1151 is when his dad dies.
Which is generally not impossible, but generally difficult to be born after your dad is dead.
Yeah. So Yaropuk III is a grandson of our boy Yuri, and he's the son of Yuri's eldest son, Rostislav.
Okay.
His mom's name, you know, Jane Doe.
Yeah.
We don't know it. So that's it. That's all we know about his childhood.
Beautiful.
We don't know when it started. We can guess he's kind of young. So I'd put him closer to like the 1140s, 1130s at most, but probably like late 1140s, because he's a younger child of Rostislav. Mm-hmm. So like, I'll give him some that bit. So he's young. His childhood basically goes along the same through line as Mikhalko's. He ends up exiled to Constantinople in 1162. When Andrei Bogolyubsky, the big first prince of Vladimir Suzdal, takes up all the lands of Vladimir Suzdal as his own. Mm-hmm. But Yaropuk goes down to Constantinople to participate in life there instead of living it up in Sochi as Mikhalko does last episode. He gets some good Greek food, not some like shoreside Russian food. Mm-hmm. So he's living life with baklava right now. It's great.
Yeah, he's got good eats.
Yeah, he's got gyros. He's like, I could get some pickles and gyros and actually have seasoned food. This is great. You mean there's no dough on here? Awesome. What do you mean this is yogurt? Where's the sour cream? So that's what we know from like 1162. It's only a decade later when Yaropuk III returns to the narrative in any way, shape, or form. Because Andrei Bogolyubsky is kicking out the sons of Rostislav I, former grand prince, you know, the manager that you kind of liked, from Kiev. He's basically saying, hey, you guys can't be in there. I want to put in my own people. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. After he kicked them out, Andrei, as we saw last episode, would invite Mikhalko to become the Grand Prince of Kiev. Mikhalko would go there for about 5 weeks, say, hell no, hate this place, don't want to be here, and then give the position to his brother, Sievolod the Bignest, and his nephew, Yaropuk III. So Yaropuk III was on the Kievan throne for 5 weeks, more so as a junior prince for Sievolod. That is until the Rostislavichi, the sons of Rostislav I, which will end up confusing people, because technically Yaropuk III is also a Rostislavichi, because he's the son of Rostislav Yurevich. It's a mess.
He's a Rostislavichi, but not the Rostislavichi.
Exactly. His father's not important enough. So Rostislav I's sons rebelled and wanted to retake Kiev from Sievolod. They managed to do that. The siege did not take long. Something about an entryway through weak walls that were kind of broken in a siege 5 years ago. They kind of let people know the easy way into Kiev. Made it very easy for Yaropuk and Sievolod the Bignest to be captured. Mm-hmm. It's like Sparta, the 300 battle. You know, once everyone knew about the Hell's Gates, everybody kind of knew the shortcut. Like,
yeah, exactly. Once you know the shortcut, everybody knows the shortcut.
Yeah, and like, you know, they were still kind of struggling after that, like, siege. This is when Yaropuk had the adventure of his life.
Okay.
So he became a pawn for his extended family.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No, because he'd be swapped around by his family members. And essentially, if they needed to do hostage exchanges, you know, for anything, they'd be like, hey, we have Yaropuk. He's a hostage. We'll exchange him for another hostage. Have fun.
I'm Yaropuk and I am hostage coded.
Exactly. So he got sent as far as Galicia-Volhynsk, where Yaroslav Eightwits wanted to exchange him for his own son, Vladimir, who was currently hiding with Mikhalko of last episode's fame. So, yeah, he's a semi-permanent hostage. No one really wants to keep him or free him. They're just like, yeah, you know, we'll keep you around just in case we need to exchange you for someone we actually want. Someone will want you eventually.
Someone. Somebody.
You poor orphan. No one wants you. But at some point, he'd be freed by somebody. No clue who. And his brothers, the Rostislavichi of his family, would be attacked by Andrei. Or was it the other Rostislavichi? I'm confused. It's fine. some sort of Rostislavichi are attacked by Andrei, probably the ones who had Kiev already, which were Rostislav the First's sons. There we go. Boom. Bada bing.
We got there.
So Andrei lost his fight, which would be the fight that would basically start his downfall. But we know that Yaropolk would be joined by his brother Mstislav to fight alongside the Rostislavichi. Hey, more Mstislavs. After Andrei's lost, his downfall led to, do you remember what happened to him?
No.
You know, when people don't like you anymore and they think, you know, hey, you kind of suck and you're a ruler.
Killed?
Yeah, killed? He gets killed by Snail and his in-laws.
Ah, right. Yeah, that's right. He got killed by the evil Snail's in-laws eventually. That's right.
Well, yeah, his wife Snail, Ulita, and her family killed him.
That's right.
And as we saw last time, the nobles of Rostov, Suzdal, and Pereyaslavl all came together and were like, hey, let's have a meeting here and a quick discussion. Who do we want in power in Vladimir Suzdal? Do we want it to be someone in Andrei's family? Nah, we killed him. We don't want anyone in his family. They'd have revenge on us.
We can't enable the revengeing.
No, we can't have that. So they're like, you know, Yuri Dokuroki had an eldest son who didn't happen to inherit because he died before his father. So by inheritance, it should go to him, right? And then in a grave somewhere down in Kiev somewhere, you just hear Yaroslav the Wise going, it should go to the brother. And they're like, you know what? We want someone that Rostislav Yurevich sired instead of Yuri's actual children like Mikhalko. Because, you know, they wanted to have some sort of power and have a different part of the family indebted to them. So kind of let them do what the heck they want. It also helps that Yaropolk and his brothers are kind of young.
Might be easier to control.
Yeah, they're only in their 20s, you know, if we go by being born in the 40s at this rate. So they all came together and were like, you know what? We want Yaropolk and his brother Mstislav to rule over us. To do so, they're like, what we need, you know, someone with princely authority to kind of help us out. We don't want anyone to just kind of send some nobles and they just get arrested. We need, you know, a prince to be an envoy, because if they arrest him, it's war. Not a problem. So they invite the brother-in-law of Yaropolk and Mstislav, Prince Gleb of Ryazan, to coordinate the efforts to invite them to become the new grand princes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Prince Gleb was like, oh my god, I get to be important for once? He agreed, and he traveled down to Chernigov, where with a group of envoys to invite Yaropolk and Mstislav to the north to rule. They're like, hey, come on up, be the new grand prince, rule over us, rule over them. On arrival, they did meet up with the two princes, and one of these envoys was like, hey, once your father, Rostislav, was our prince, and he was very good to us, come and rule us. We want no one else there. However, things got quiet in the room. And they were wondering, why isn't Yaropolk and Mstislav responding? Because who else do you think is in the room with them?
Oh,
it's Mickey.
That's right. Mickey should have inherited.
Yeah, Mickey should have inherited. And, you know, his other uncle, Fievel the Bigness, is there. And
multiple other older members of the family. Yeah.
Yeah, and since the Rus kind of followed Yaroslav the Wise's succession plan, which is the next eldest brother inherits, they're looking at him like, you know, with alcohol in their hand, probably some sort of like mead, being like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is our inheritance.
You mean the inheritance that the Rus sort of kind of followed sometimes?
Well, yeah, like they're doing now.
Yeah.
Yaropolk was like, hey, you know, God help the Druginas remembering our father's love for them. And then he turned to his uncles and told them, do not grieve or bear any grudge against us, because the Druginas of Rostov and Suzdal want us and not you to rule them. We did not send them anyone, or did we ask to become prince there. They themselves urged us to do so at their insistence. If, however, you wish also to be prince there, then go thither and rule over them. If, however, you do not wish to do it by yourself, then let us all four go together, two Yurevichi and two Rostislavichi, all together in happy ruliedom.
Cooperation.
Rulimony.
Cooperation.
Yeah.
Like, look, yeah. They're like, look. Don't yell at me. I didn't ask for this. They invited me. But if you want to be in charge, just let me know. It's fine. You can be in charge if you want.
Basically how it went. And his uncles, Mikhalko and Sievolod the Big Nest, found this very agreeable. They brought a, you know, they got the Bishop of Chertigov to bring on a big old cross. They pledged on the cross that, hey, we're going to rule together, and they kissed it.
Man, they love bringing out a big old cross to make pledges to.
I mean, we kind of still do it.
Now we just usually do it on like a swearing on the Bible or whatever, but it's the same idea.
Yeah. So it's a holy vow. They can't break it, right?
Except for all those times other people have broken it.
But it'll work this time, Aura. It'll work this time.
It's never worked for anybody else, but it could work for us.
It's like the true communism, people.
It's never been tried yet. Say, don't worry, we'll get to that in like 200 episodes.
Honestly, yeah. The Tsar is going to take forever. So the envoys heard this and they rushed back to tell their nobility the amazing news of what happened. And the envoys were like, yeah. So the following days, the four princes departed from Moscow as a rest stop, you know, because it's halfway there, it'll be fine. As they were traveling, the nobles of Rostov and Suzdal finally heard the envoys' news that Mikhalko and Sevalod were coming to rule over them. And what do you expect their reaction was?
Unhappy.
Essentially along the lines of, fuck no. So they sent new envoys to Moscow, but this time with the express direction of talking to Yaropolk all by himself with no one else around. You know, don't say the big news with the other claimants to the throne there.
I got some big news for you that you need to hear all by yourself.
Is this going to be an assassination or is it actually good news?
It's either an assassination or we secretly want you to usurp everybody else.
Exactly. Who knows in Russia? But this time, they managed to corner Yaropolk by himself. And, you know, in a small alleyway in the tents, we're like, hey, Yaropolk, we want you there as of yesterday. And we have an army, a Druzhina, for you to command. Come over. And Yaropolk was like, yep, let me get my shit. I'll be right there. And Mikhalko, you know, was kind of running around, walking around camp. And he sees this envoy walking around, you know, like he's trying to leave.
Mm-hmm.
The envoy is like, oh, shit. And Mikhalko's like, oh, you guys here to tell me more news, you know, that I'm going to be the best ruler? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And the envoy then said, Mikhalko, we're so excited for you to come and rule us. You know, you should wait in Moscow until we're ready for your coronation. We'll let you know when you can come over.
You just hang tight. Just hang tight.
Yeah, just hang tight. Let me go, you know, back to Radomir Suzdal to kind of check the how things are going. And Mikhalko's like, sure. And the envoy sped off and Mikhalko went to sleep. Yaropolk heard his uncle's loud snores in the middle of the night, and he fled to the Pereyaslavin camp to command the Druzhina. On arrival to the camp, the troops immediately pledged their fealty to Yaropolk and his brother Mstislav. They then marched to Rostov and Suzdal, gathering the remaining Druzhina that were there, and began their march towards Vladimir with about 1,500 men at their side. Mikhalko awoke the next morning with the best sleep of his life, and he's like, huh, why are there two missing cots here? There's two empty cots. Where'd they go? And he's like, ah, shit.
Ah, hate it when you oversleep.
Yep, so he gets on his horse and he rushes to Vladimir to prepare for a siege. So, as we heard last episode, this siege lasted for 7 weeks and Vladimir faced starvation. And Yaropolk allowed his troops to destroy the surrounding lands and enrich themselves on the wealth of the people. And, you know, things were, you know, we're holding up. Mikhalko's like, we can do this. I've got this. I just have to wait him out. But then the princes of Ryazan, Gleb, and the prince of Murom came and assisted him against Mikhalko. So Mikhalko's like, you know what? There's too many guys. I have to surrender, you know, just for the sake of the people. You know, Mikhalko surrendered and escaped from the city. And Yaropolk and his brother would enter Vladimir as the new rulers of the whole territory. The people of Vladimir begrudgingly swore fealty to Yaropolk and Mstislav in exchange for leniency for them defending in a siege. Or like, hey, technically, he was our prince. You know, we're following orders. So be a bit lenient. We're making you our rulers now.
They're like, don't punish us. We were just doing our, like, duty.
Yeah. So Yaropolk was like, that's okay, as long as I'm in control. And he was crowned the Grand Prince of Vladimir Suzdal. This was much to the annoyance of the Vladimirian people, because they really did not like Yaropolk and Mstislav. But what else could they do? They had no food. They were on the brink of starvation. And that was it. So after this, Yaropolk would marry an unnamed princess from Vitebsk.
Another one of those. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it happens. So the two brothers would end up not making Vladimir their capital. Instead, Yaropolk would rule over Suzdal and Mstislav over Rostov, the two old cities. And they distributed their land amongst their allies and raised taxes on those that they ruled over. Many nobles, especially those not allied with the two princes, would need to sell off their lands in order to pay these taxes. So if you were his ally, you were fine. If you weren't, tax, baby. So why was all of this done? You know, there's some reasoning here. Well, it just so happens that Yaropolk and Mstislav were considered young princes, and the boyars, the nobles of Rostov and Suzdal, were like, hey, this could give you some very sound advice when it comes to ruling the land, because you've never really ruled anything on your own before. They steered them in the correct direction to maximize their own wealth. You know, the classic Russian scheme of, hey, let's get more money for the rich people.
I mean, you mean the classic ruler scheme?
The classic ruler scheme, yeah, yeah. You know, the classic oligarch scheme. See, it goes all the way back to here, baby. So Yaropolk himself would be instigated to give away the revenues of the churches in Vladimir, alongside all the wealth inside of them, to the Prince of Ryazan Glib, you know, as payment for the assistance they gave him. And even worse, one of these treasures included the icon of the Theotokos that Andrei Bogolyubsky had stolen from Yuri Dolgoruki.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people of Vladimir hated this. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? That's a church. They were like, we could put up with being taxed to oblivion, having our land taken, but you do not touch the goddamn church. So the boyars of Vladimir sent envoys to Mikhalko and Chernigov to aid them against Yaropolk's greedy ways, and he marched up with an army. So Yaropolk and Mstislav heard of Mikhalko's march, and Aurora, I have to make a correction.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I said that Yaropolk and Mstislav had gone to the forest and got lost while Mikhalko took the main road. I messed that up because the chronicles don't make sense half the time. It was Mikhalko who actually invaded Yaropolk and Mstislav's force by going through a forest, while Yaropolk and Mstislav took the main road. So I'm sorry I messed that up, guys. Aurora, I'm so, so sorry. You can send me to the gulag.
Look, there's no, we never make corrections. We make addendums to things we said before.
Okay, yes. That actually never happened last episode. It's always been this way, you know. Eurasia was always at war with Oceania.
We never said there was a war in Basingse. What are you talking about?
There is no war in Basingse. So Yaropolk scouts did pick up news that Mikhalko was being carried around in a stretcher and was very sick. So Yaropolk sent his brother Mstislav to fight against him, you know, because that'd be an easy victory. The commander's sick. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Mstislav did face Mikhalko, and through apparently some divine intervention, he lost the battle. And the two brothers had to flee the territory, leaving their wives and mother behind. Mikhalko would then become the prince of Vladimir Suzdal and would end up forcing Gleb to return all the goods that Yaropolk had given him. So that icon they stole, right back in the church, everything's back in its place. And, you know, that's his rule. So,
wow.
There's not much after that. We do have some tidbits here and there.
Uh-huh.
Because he does keep popping up. He's like a little, like, footnote afterwards. This guy is literally just a footnote in history. Aurora.
Good lord, yeah.
Time would pass, and as we know, Mikhalko dies a year later. His brother, Vsyevolod the Bigness, takes over. And as we'll find out next episode, he begins shoring up the territory under his control. Vsyevolod takes the fight to Yaropolk's brother, Mstislav, and forces him to escape to Ryazan. Then, Vsyevolod defeats Ryazan and captures Mstislav and Prince Gleb. A message then came from Vsyevolod the Bigness to the boyars of Ryazan. Give him Yaropolk or face his wrath. The Ryazan nobles decided to do, you know, the best course of action. And they sent Yaropolk to a different city for his safety.
Mm-hmm.
So once Yaropolk was on his, you know, safely on his way to Voronezh, the city, the boys of Ryazan then sent a note to Vsyevolod saying, hey, he's taking this route. He has no guards. Have fun.
Yeah, we just sort of sent him out there. Good luck. Go get him.
Yeah. So Yaropolk would then be captured and imprisoned alongside his brother and Prince Gleb of Ryazan. So there we have Yaropolk sitting in the dungeons of Vladimir. And then he heard cries through the windows. And the people of Vladimir want to blind him and his brother.
Oh.
Unknown to Yaropolk, Sievel of the Bigness, the current ruler, is like, no, let's not do that. We don't want to start this tradition again. Didn't go so well for the last guy who did this.
Yeah, it didn't go well for the other Cievalode who let a guy in prison be drug out and blinded or whatever.
It wasn't even in prison. They just kidnapped him and blinded him. So
that's right. That's right, yeah.
But you can't stop the will of the people, Aurora. When they all band together, they can topple rulers.
Sometimes.
So they broke into the dungeons, grabbed Yarbok and Mstislav, and blinded them.
Oof.
So after this, they were released, the light of the window being the last light they ever saw.
Oof. That's dirty.
Yeah, that's very dirty. But they're not dead yet, so we still have some stories. So they walk around together, you know, around Roost for several months. They're begging, they're asking for assistance, you know, hey, can you, like, take me to the next city? And trying to do the best thing they can. And their eyes begin to rot, or the remnants of their eyes. Because the blinding was done dirty. Really, it was.
Yeah, this was no, like, professional Byzantine blinding.
No, they scooped out the eyeballs. They didn't use, like, heated up mercury. They just scooped it up. So, at some point, they'd be led to the Church of the Holy Miracle Makers, Boris and Gleb, on Smeaden, which is the site on where St. Gleb had been murdered.
Uh-huh.
And while they were there, they prayed and they prayed. And on the anniversary of Gleb's death, their eyeballs would become restored. Their eyeballs grew back.
That's not a thing. That's not a thing that happens.
That's the thing that happened. Their eyeballs grew back.
That's not how eyes work, Roberta.
It grew back, Aurora.
That's not how that works.
You know what to say about rulers. They're all lizard people. They can regenerate limbs.
Okay, look, I know that this is what the Chronicles say. The only explanation I have for this is that they didn't actually have their eyeballs destroyed previously, just damaged, and they eventually recovered, but not destroyed actually permanently, because I'm sorry, you can't just regrow eyeballs.
But, Aurora, believe in God's might.
Sure, you're right.
It was through the will of Salune that they got their eyeballs back. Like, she cast greater restoration
Please,
on them.
Salune is not restoring the eyes of random greedy nobility. Please.
True. Well, a few weeks later, Gleb of Ryazan would die in prison in Vladimir after a botched binding. So he actually died. The other two were fine.
Yeah, sure. Just fine. Yep.
So this gave Yarbok a chance to go up to Novgorod with his brother, and together they'd be invited to become rulers. So Mstislav would take Novgorod for himself, and Yarbok would control the smaller town of Torzhok.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? Things went well for the two of them. You know, they were ruling in peace, they were prosperous, they were making money. And then Mstislav died.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, you know what, Yarbok, we like you enough, let's make you the Prince of Novgorod. And immediately, Sievalod would wave his big nest at Novgorod, arrest their merchants, and he would call for the Novgorodian boyars to oust Yarbok from power if he ever wanted to see their merchants again. And the Novgorodians were like, yep, that's fine. And just to add insult to injury, Sievalod then took Torzhok from Yarbok, leaving him an izgoy, or a landless prince.
Okay.
So Yarbok would remain in Novgorod for the next few years, living as a commoner and potentially as a beggar, or maybe working an actual job. Who knows?
Look, man should just be grateful he got his eyeballs back.
Right? That's like the only blessing he gets in this life. But you know what? The Prince of Novgorod at the time did feel bad for Yarbok. I'm not going to name who the prince is because they change like...
Every 30 days.
They change like a fuckboy changes partners.
Oh my god.
And the Prince of Novgorod did feel bad for Yarbok and granted him Torzhok to rule over once more. But Yarbok was like, hey, I have land. I have an army. I want to fight Sievalod.
I need some revengeing.
So Yarbok grabbed his small Drusina and started raiding Sievalod's lands. Sievalod looked at him and was like, god damn this fly. And he immediately marched to attack Torzhok. Yarbok was like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And he retreated back to Torzhok to defend against Sievalod's forces.
Wait, never mind. I didn't mean it.
Yep. Sorry. Several weeks into the siege, while inspecting the walls of the city on the ramparts, one of Sievalod's soldiers would shoot Yarbok down with an arrow.
Lamau.
But he survived. He was just knocked unconscious.
It was a knockout arrow. Okay.
It was the one arrow with like the boxing glove on it. But the people of Torzhok had had enough. It's been 10 weeks and they were starving.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while Yarbok was unconscious, they surrendered to Sievalod, and the boyars of Torzhok were also surrendered over by the people. They're like, here's the nobility, here's Yaropolk, we don't want them. Siavlo, please come over and come in and rule over us.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we don't know what happens to Yaropolk. We have a few different competing claims. One by historian A.V. Exempliarski, which states that after this, Yaropolk would die in captivity from his wounds in that same year. However, in another source, we then see that he shows up again briefly, where Siavlod asked the Prince of Chernigov to oust Yaropolk in 1196 because he remained a claimant to the seat of Vladimir, and then they gave him over and he died soon after that. So, Aurora, it's up to you. How do you prefer that he died? Died from his wounds from, you know, the knockout arrow, or gets given over and then maybe executed?
I don't think he gets executed. I don't think so.
So died from wounds from that arrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's give him that a bit of a fightier death. I may help his points.
Yeah, he didn't just get like summarily killed. He was trying to do a defend and got hurt. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. So that's it. He's dead.
Wow. What a story.
You know what? I had a script and I just flourished it even more just for the sake of humor and funniness. So the script was 5 pages.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was short. So you ready?
I'm ready. I'm prepared.
Okay.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
Gamarjoba, my name is Roberto, and I would like to sincerely thank you for taking the time to check out my podcast, The History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. In all likelihood, I would venture to guess that you found us because you were searching for either podcasts, YouTube videos, blogs about the history of Georgia, or you're hearing this on another podcast, like this one. I'm both sorry and happy to report that this beautiful and fascinating country is, to my great surprise, criminally underrated in the history world. As of now, this is the only podcast I am aware of dedicated to the full history of a nation and a people that have served as the battleground for empires all throughout European and Asian history. But the land of the Kartveli is so much more than that. The birthplace of wine, the second Christian kingdom, the land of fantastic food, nearly superhuman dancers and musicians, and perhaps, most importantly, a people that have preserved their culture, pride, and independence after centuries of one conquest after another. Empires rise and fall, but Sakartvelo always seems to survive in the end. So, let us celebrate this beautiful land by coming with me on this journey from prehistory to the present day, right here at the History of Sakartvelo, Georgia. You can find us on Twitter at @history_Georgia. Sakartvelo is spelled Sakartvelo. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Specialna operacja.
Special operations. How well did they do in battle, lead in battle, or have others lead in battle for them?
I'll say this. He won the battle to become Grand Prince, but that's the bare minimum to be on the show.
He won the one battle he needed to win to qualify. I mean, technically, you could be Grand Prince without battling, but yeah, it's got to be pretty low.
And he only won because he got reinforcements from his brother-in-law, because Mikako was actually holding out for a bit. So what do you want to give him?
Oh, God, does he get like a 2?
I don't want to give him. If you want to give him a 2, I'm not going to give him anything.
Okay, you know what? 1. Let's give him a 1. He won one battle.
Okay.
He gets one point for every battle he won.
Well, that's it. He lost a lot. So that's a one in special operations. Alrighty. Us, bieh.
Success. How successful were they in running their nation? What cultural significance did they leave behind? Mark at zero, Donnie.
Yep, I had that already ready. He did nothing. He lost. He got kicked out. Everything went back to the status quo after he got kicked out. So, like, nothing.
Literally nothing changed. Literally nothing.
That's a zero for success. Alrighty. Compromat.
Blackmail. What things did they do behind closed doors or outwardly that made others dislike them? I mean, he was disliked, but I don't think it was for, like, sneaky backdoor blackmail reasons.
I mean, it was outwardly, too, that people disliked them. Vladimir hated because he overly taxed them, forced their non-allied nobles to sell their lands, and he gave away the treasure from the church. They really hated him, but, like, he's kind of a nothing burger.
I don't consider that, like, yeah, I taxed them too much, they hated me. That's not compromat. That goes back to being a bad ruler at running your nation.
Yeah.
It's not like he used some, like, strategy to, like, get more tax from the nobles. You know what I mean? He wasn't doing anything, like, underhanded. He's just like, pay me more. That's not compromat. That's just bad rulership.
That's a zero for me, dog.
Yeah, zero.
That's a zero for compromat.
You know what?
All right.
I almost want to go back and change his special operations to zero, too, so he has no points.
Yeah, you can do that. We're still ranking him, so yeah.
Yeah, back to zero. He has 0 points so far.
Zero across the board. Alrighty. Boże mój.
Oh my god. How good do they look?
Alright, I'm sending you the picture now. He's on the chair.
Hang on, it's loading. It's loading, hold on.
Okay.
He sure looks like a guy. he's just a little guy sitting in a chair that looks like it was drawn by an elementary school kid. I just see a robe and a red hat, and he's got long hair. That's about all I can tell. It's not even, like, there's literally no descriptive, like, features of him that I can tell you about. It's nothing.
He doesn't even have a beard. Like
a Rus ruler, and he doesn't even have any sort of facial hair effect, you lose points for that.
Yep. So what do you want to give him?
Zero.
I'm giving him a zero as well. Oh, God. That's a zero in Boże mój. All right, smiert.
Death. How did they die? Our guy's first points because of a decision I made a few minutes ago.
So he got knocked out by an arrow.
Died later of his wounds.
Died from his injuries.
Honestly, even if we went with the other one where he got executed, that's still better than dying of old age, you know?
Yeah.
Died of wounds sustained in battle? Two? Three? He was doing something.
So like a 2.5 maybe?
You give him a 2, I'll give him a 3, that gives him a 2.5, right? Isn't that how that works?
Yeah. So yeah. I'll give him 2 for that, you give him 3. That is a 2.5 overall. Awesome. And then the last one is, we don't rank this one. So Vladichestva.
Sovereignty. How long were they on the throne?
So how long do you think they were on the throne for, Aurora?
15 minutes, give or take.
Yeah, you're about right. So Yaroslav III ruled the throne of Vladimir Suzdal from September 1st, 1174, from 11 a.m. until September 1st, 1174, to 11:15 p.m. No, that's a joke. No. So he ruled the throne from September 1st, 1174, until he was ousted on June 15th, 1175, having him reign for 9 months, giving him a score of 0.30. So, Aurora, his total score
is our new lowest?
A 2.80, which is our new lowest.
Yes! Yaropolk continue to suck.
But, Aurora, the points don't matter. Do you think Yaropolk is a footnote enough, shitty enough, or do you think he's, like, unknown enough to go party out in the Kremlin, or do we ship him off to the gulag?
Is he so pathetic that it, like, does, like, a stack overflow and goes back to being cool, and we send him to the Kremlin? I don't think so.
You know, I had off the gulag from the start.
This man's going to the gulag faster than anyone ever has.
Oh, boy.
The only cool thing he did was somehow regrow his eyeballs.
I know, right? Oh, boy. So, off to the gulag! I can't believe that happened.
What a terrible, terrible ruler. Oh my God.
I know.
Some of it wasn't his fault, but like he didn't help himself at all, like ever.
No. Like
he's worse than Vyacheslav the First.
It's like, what did Vyacheslav actually get points in? He got 1 in special operations and 2.5 in Bozhemoy. Mm. And that was it. And he rode longer.
I think occasionally in the past for like Bozhemoy, if we don't know what they look like or it's, I sort of give him like a middle score because I'm like, look, I don't know what that looked like. Could have been good, could have been bad. This guy, no, 0. Don't care.
Yeah, it's fine. It's whatever. He's done.
We're going to go from this guy to a guy that has like a really involved life and a lot of stuff going on, aren't we?
Yeah, the next guy is going to be on for a long time. Yeah. Just to let you know, we're currently in the 1170s. The next guy is going to take us a bit into the 13th century.
Oh, so we're looking. He's doing like 30, near nigh on 30 years of stuff.
Oh, a bit longer than that.
Ooh.
So we'll find out next time.
It takes a long time to get to from one side of his nest to the other.
It really does. It really does. So with that, I do want to say here that we are going on a hiatus for December because it's the holiday season. I don't like doing things in December.
That's true.
And also because we are going to be doing Civil of the Big Nest, and we're going to have 2 other episodes involved, which are about Igor the Brave and Roman the Great, which we want to research and record ahead of time.
That's right.
And we have guests for that, so we actually have to get them, you know, on ahead of time to do that stuff.
Hey, guys can listen to somebody who isn't us.
They'll still listen to us, but like the...
Well, I mean, there'll be someone else.
There'll be someone else.
Along with.
Yeah. So just because we like the guest episodes, and we kind of, you know, just to kind of give a spoiler, the narrative in our, you know, main show is going to start moving northwards at this point. It won't be like the whole of Rus anymore. It's going to be like the northernmost section, you know, with like Novgorod, Vladimir Suzdal, and then a small little place called Muscovy that's showing up.
Muscovy. Yeah, for, you know, believe it or not, after this while, Kiev, not nearly as important.
No.
Or directly as involved in our story for a little while for, you know, reasons.
And they'll be involved, but it's not like, oh, we placed a king, we placed a ruler there. All right, cool, bye.
Yeah. It's more of like a dependency than like where the seat of power is.
Exactly. So, Aurora, it's time for recommendations. Do you have anything you want to recommend?
The newest expansion to Crusader Kings 3, of course, All Under Heaven. The expansion that adds all of Asia.
You took my recommendation.
All right, well, then you can talk about that and I'll do my music one.
No, it's fine. You got it.
No, so Crusader Kings 3, just the biggest expansion ever, All Under Heaven, adding all of China and Indonesia and Malaysia and the very edge of Papua New Guinea and the Philippines and Japan. And you know what?
So fun.
They've induced like a bunch of new government types, like meritocratic and celestial and mandala. And it's actually really fun. I've been playing it a lot. I'm ruling nearly all of Southeast Asia from my throne in Bali.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I'm having a great time. I will say, my only mild criticism, there's a lot of pop-ups in this government type. Boy, are there a lot of notifications that I have to remove constantly.
Yeah, I've had to put the speed down to like 2.
Yeah, you mean I can't play at speed 5 all the time? What kind of game is this?
Right?
But no.
I thought I played in Europe, speed 5.
Yeah, I just get my county and I sit there. No, it's been a lot of fun. Actually, I enjoy the different like cultural traditions and government roles and like new stuff that they've added is a lot of fun. Playing in China where you can like have to force your family to take exams and your children get stressed out if they fail exams. Very realistic. Thank you, Paradox. it's a lot of fun. And biggest bonus points to it, your game doesn't crash constantly and it really hasn't affected performance that much, all things considered, which is something I was really worried about with, you know, trying to run a game this big and adding this much land and this many new characters. Has not really affected performance. So you know what? As opposed to some of their other DLCs lately, which were a bit of a flop, specifically the one right before this one, this DLC, really good. Really, really good.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I've been waiting for this one for a while, too. And yeah, I've been living my life in Japan because I'm a weeb.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a bureaucrat, just kind of doing my thing. Eventually, I'm going to have one guy who's like, but what if I was in power?
Yep.
And then I'll do that. But
eventually, one of them will want to unite enough to become shogun. But eventually.
Exactly. And then I'll conquer China.
My experience playing in like Bali and like Indonesia has been I had a lot of money and my rulers were pretty charismatic. And so I just had like people walking up to my door and being like, hey, can I pay you tribute? And you're like, yeah, sure, why not? And then their neighbors come up and they're like, hey, can we pay you tribute? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And suddenly I have like the entirety of like Malaysia and the Philippines and Indonesia all just, and just like either my vassals are offering me tribute and I'm just sort of sitting there like, yeah, I'll come around occasionally and bless your crops. Way to go, champ. It's pretty great.
Yeah, honestly, like I kind of like all the stuff they've put into Crusader Kings 3 because now it feels way more alive. And like I'm just waiting for some of my mods to come back into action.
Hey, some of the best ones were updated almost immediately, you know, like your rice and like cultural expansion mods. But hey, they'll be back soon.
Alrighty. So my recommendation, other than Crusader Kings 3 All Under Heaven, is, Aurora, have you heard of a show called Hasbin Hotel?
I have heard of it. I have.
Oh, God, I'm so obsessed with it. And I love it to death.
You've been obsessed with it for a while now, frankly.
I have a Lucifer, little, like, figure.
Uh-huh.
And I have a little monitor buddy for Alistair and Nifty. So I just have them with me at all times. Those are my three favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
Ranked Lucifer, Nifty, and Alistair. So, yeah. Season 2 just came out, like, 2 weeks ago. It's been great. I love it. I recommend it to anybody. It's graphic, though. But if you're listening to this show, you just heard me use so many swear words this time around. I was doing way more off-the-cuff stuff. So now you know that, oh, Roberto swears like a sailor.
When we're not... specifically trying not to.
I've listened to the first season's album nonstop. Nifty has a song in season 2 and I am obsessed with it. It's great. I can't sing it because it's too fast, but it's great.
Uh-huh.
So highly recommend. That's the only spoiler you're getting is that Nifty has a song, but it's great. I'm waiting for the next batch of episodes. My partner and I have been watching it, but I watch it without her so I can just watch it a second time.
Don't worry, I won't tattle.
Oh, she knows. She knows. She's like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, watching shows. She's like, has been. I'm like, yes. She's like, yes, as long as you watch it with me. All right, cool. Alrighty, so let's get to the end bit here. So to get more direct contact with us, feel free to access our website at czarpower.com. There you can find the show notes, pictures, bibliography, and vote on whether you think Europa III deserves the Kremlin or the Gulag. Also, you can get merchandise there, too. It also has links to our social media, which is just at ZarPowerPod. Zar is spelled T-S-A-R, which you should know if you're listening to this, but the website also has not been updated in a while. That's a thing for December. If you'd like to help the show expand and grow, feel free to subscribe to Patreon and get access to bonus episodes whenever they come out. I'll be writing quite a few this December, so Aurora, get ready for all of Pushkin's life.
Oh, I'm ready.
And there we also have like an Amazon book wish list, a PayPal, a Ko-fi. So get us books, get us things, support us any way you can. If you'd like to do something that's free, leave a review on your favorite podcast host, be it Apple or Spotify. And Aurora, where can they hear more of your hot takes?
Go back and listen to back episodes of my sort of on hiatus other podcast, which is about fantasy and sci-fi books. It's called Sword, Sorcery, and Socialism. My co-host Ketho and I look at politics and themes hiding in genre fiction. We're taking a break for a while because of life stuff, but there's, you know, like 3 years worth of back episodes you can go and listen to so you can learn about cyberpunk and wizards and all sorts of other things we talked about in the past.
Lots of fun stuff. I'm excited for the next episode, Aurora. Probably because I have to edit it. But.
Whenever we get to it, you will be editing it. That is true.
Awesome. And that's a goodbye from me.
See ya.
Warning. Radio Tsar Power is speaking. We have a very important message. Comrades and citizens of the Soviet Union, today, in the year, on the month and day of, we have received a few important questions from our listeners. Comrade Aurora, may you read the questions, please.
Under capitalism, will we still have money?
No, none of that either.
Could an atom bomb destroy our beloved town, Tbilisi, with its splendid buildings and beautiful gardens?
In principle, yes, but Moscow is by far a more beautiful city.
What is chaos?
We do not comment on national economics. If you'd like to have a message and question read out loud, please send them in to czarpowerpod@gmail.com. This has been a Radio Tsar Power announcement. We hope to have made your stay a bit more enjoyable. See you at the Gulag.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.